Turn over to the second side. And we'll spend a few moments focusing on the topic of relationships. Again, we sense the message of the Gaon of Vilna. Do not be jealous of wealth. People will cry tomorrow what brought them joy today. Don't be jealous of honor. It's an illusion. If you try to satisfy yourself, it's like drinking salt water. Don't define yourself by other people. Self-date. Decide what you want. I remember growing up in Muncie, there was a certain person who always bought very fancy cars, luxury cars. I remember at one time, you know, very careful what he bought. But it was always like 10, 15 years old. And I wondered, for what? What's he driving this for? Until I realized that his next door neighbor was buying and was able to afford these cars. And this gentleman felt the void because he compared himself to his neighbor. He couldn't afford the real thing. These were the days before you just put it on credit, monthly payments. He couldn't afford it, but he had to have it. And he drived a Shmata town car, but he was driving a town car. Take a look at 9. What an amazing attitude. You shall consider all people greater than yourself. You meet a person. Have the self-confidence to give them compliments. If he's wise or wealthy, so it's easy to honor him. If you're wiser or more wealthy than he is, then realize that you are more obligated than he is. Rabbi Saul Salanter was once in the middle of a conversation, and they hit a difficult point in Torah where no one knew the answer. And suddenly, he stands up and he reaches to the back of the bookcase and he pulls out an obscure sefer and he opens it to the right page and he shows them the answer is printed there. He saw that answer 35 years ago and he remembered it and he knew where to find it. And he promptly fainted. So they revived him and they asked him, what happened? He said, I didn't realize that Hashem blessed me with such a good memory. You know what my responsibilities are? I didn't realize. He fainted. He was shocked. The Ramban writes, if the other person has shortcomings, your attitude should be, he is mistaken. He doesn't realize those shortcomings are so serious. But you know. So you're responsible. That takes a lot of self-confidence. A person who's confident who they are can look at other people and see their greatness. I don't know if you ever wondered, but the word gamal, what's a gamal? Good. Camel is strongly related to the words gemilus chasadim. What's gemilus chasadim? Kindness, acts of kindness. What's the relationship between a camel and gemilus chasadim? Rav Shamsha Rafael Hirsch writes, in analyzing the word, he says, a gomel is able to go into the desert and only pay attention to his master. Why? Because he's provided for. He has plenty of water. He has eyelids that work perfectly in the desert sand. He feels provided for. You want to rest? We'll rest. You want to go? We'll go. The Gemara is very flexible because he feels provided for. And now he can concentrate on others. A person who practices Gemilus Chasadim is the same type of personality. It doesn't mean he's rich. It doesn't mean he's poor. It's a person who feels provided for. A person who can go ahead and see beyond himself. That's an enormous self-confidence. And it comes up not just in Gemilas Chasadim and acts of charity. It comes up in giving a compliment. Every interaction we have, if a person, you got a blessing tonight, you should be a camel. If a person can be a camel, then he has that strength to relate in an enormous way with other people. One final topic on relationships, number 10. He writes to his wife, "The children must honor you, my mother, and all those who are older than them." I wonder what the Vilna Gaon would say to the contemporary trend of calling people 40 years your senior by their first name. Mr. So-and-so, Mrs. So-and-so. How would he react if I walked over to somebody 40 years my senior and said, "Hey, Freddie, how you doing?" To respect. Why do we respect older people? Why is that so important? Two dimensions. One is, they're closer to Sinai. And we get our wisdom from a God gift from Sinai. The second dimension, because of life experience. Person who's older has life experience, and we respect them for that. Let's move along to allocation of money, which most directly impacts the kiso aspect of self-dating. So over here, I'm actually going to give you a big discount. If you read 11, the opinion of the Vilna Gaon, and I tried to stick to the integrity of his wording, his opinion is, for God's sake, give 20% of your earnings for charity, as I commanded you. So I'm going to give you a discount. Contemporary custom, popular custom in the Jewish people, is we follow the opinion that you only have to give 10%, not 20%. But why is the Vilna Gaon so adamant? You have to give it. Anybody who gives Meiser, keep it up. If you don't, you should experiment with it. It's an enormous blessing. It's the one mitzvah we have a promise. Aser b'shvil shetes asher. If you give more to worthy causes, then God will bless you with more. I believe it's a Ritvaz. He writes, the reason is because God wanted to make sure that poor people would be provided for. So he's willing to give that blessing. That's one area he's willing to go on record. You're even allowed to test him. I remember when I was married for about 2 years, and I was diligently, you know, keeping track, how much came in, how much you give Meiser. And 1 month it was like just too much. And I couldn't afford the $100. I didn't know what I was going to do. And I remember telling my wife, until now we did it because it was a mitzvah. What should I tell you? This month I'm doing it as a test. Hashem's got to come through on his part of the bargain. But it works. Give charity to worthy causes. One of my favorite stories on the topic of Meiser is the Panavizhurov. Panavizhurov, besides being an enormous Talmud Chacham, was also a fundraiser, charity collector. And not only that, but he used his genius to distribute the funds as well. So one year, right before Pesach, this time of year, he got word that one of his big contributors lost his business. And that the whole thing collapsed with enormous debts. And the guy needed money. He felt that the guy would certainly be too proud to accept the donation directly. So he arranged with the bank to deposit the money directly into his account and to tell him, notify him that the money was wired from a relative that lives in a different country. And the guy made it big, looked him up, and he sent money wired into the account. Panavizhar Rav figures, you know, he did his good deed for the day. Mission accomplished, successfully infiltrated the bank account, got the money in, and he won't hear another word about it. The next morning, this gentleman comes to the Panavizhar Rav's house, and he says, Rebbe, I don't know if you knew, but my business wasn't doing well this year, and I wasn't able to give you the normal contribution that I give you before Pesach for your charity fund. But yesterday afternoon, they notified me that a relative of mine wired money into my account, and here's a check for 10%. Panavizhar Rav said he never got tzedakah that gave him such pleasure. Like this guy, who so much wanted to give tzedakah, when they finally give him the money and he could do it, he's right away turning around and trying to share it with others. One of the most beautiful memories I have in my parents' home is Rabbi Wein once came to my parents to ask for a donation for the yeshiva. And for whatever reason, my father said, you know, he can't give the kind of money that Rabbi Wein had been hoping for. And he made out a check, but, you know, he apologized that he couldn't do what, you know, the kind of dedication that he would have liked to. A few weeks later, a woman calls my mother up and says, you know, we've been friends for years. Do you have any charities that you could recommend that I can make a significant donation to? I already took care of my local synagogue or my local school. You're a friend of mine. Is there anything that you could suggest? So my mother right away said, you know, yeah, Rabbi Wein's yeshiva. I mean, this has been on my mind. And I remember Rabbi Wein coming back to the house after my mother called him, you know, do you mind dropping by again? And he came in. My mother presented the check to him by saying, Hashem saw that I really wanted to give you. It's not my money. I'm only a facilitator. But Hashem knew that I wanted to do it. And he gave me the ability to do it. Even if a person can't do it, but to want to do it makes an enormous impact. Another aspect of allocation of funds. Number 12. Hire a teacher for children. Don't be stingy. The children should study Torah. And he quotes the Gemara, your income is predetermined, but it doesn't include what you spend on your children's Torah education. Very powerful sense of priorities. Person should be willing to go the extra mile on such a topic. Number 13. Also something that we could delve into, we'll just read it superficially, plenty to comment on, but don't plan to leave a great inheritance for your children. Each person is born with their own mazel, with Hashem's intervention. He's not saying don't provide for your children, but he's saying don't tamper with destiny. It's not your job to provide for the children and the grandchildren and the great-grandchildren's college education. A person is born with a destiny, a mazel. Hashem knows. There's a certain amount that's your responsibility, and you should do that. You have to provide. But don't plan an inheritance. Woe to people who are so concerned to leave things to their children. The only things of value that the children can get are your Torah and your good deeds. Vilna Gaon. Okay. And finally, the last section, topic of Shabbos, a favorite of mine. Number 14, honor Shabbos without restraint. Your income is predetermined, but it does not include what you spend in honor of Shabbos. If you spend more, Hashem gives you more. Rabbi Kaplan writes a beautiful essay. Every Jew is a prince or princess on Shabbos. Doesn't matter what you have during the week. On Shabbos, you transcend every limitation. Herman Wouk has in his book, This Is My God, that on one particular production, it was Friday afternoon, it was getting late, and he excused himself. He told the screenwriter, he said, you know, I'm out of here, it's Shabbos. And he raced home, he made Shabbos, his family. He came back Saturday night, and they were still agonizing over the same problems. And the screenwriter looks at him and says, Herman, I don't envy your religion. You can keep Judaism. But I envy your Shabbos. That you could walk away and come back. Amazing. But that's the gift of Shabbos. And Shabbos is basically what you put into it. To the extent you spend the time, you spend the focus, so you'll enjoy that gift. Which brings us to 15. Remember the day of Shabbos all week. The Sifarno writes, take care to organize your work during the week so that you can effectively forget it when Shabbos comes. I had a Rebbe who told me, if you're in an endeavor and you know it, that you won't be able to forget it on Shabbos, then you have no right to do it. Person has to develop that ability, that self-control, to appreciate treasures and to know what it's worth sacrificing for. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah had a question. His question was, can I take that job? But that question comes up in a million different ways in every person's life. Can I do this? Should I do it? And the question is that there's an us. There's a personality, a haven that a person wants to create called the Jewish home that's going to last for eternity. And the question we have to run in front of ourselves, every decision we make, is this an enhancement? Is it a deterrent? To what extent? How can I go ahead and build myself and build my home to be eternal? Thank you. If there are any questions, my pleasure. Okay.